Welcome to the South Carolina State Library's podcast, Library Voices SC. I'm Curtis Rogers, Communications Director, and today I'm pleased to have with us in our podcast studio, W. Lewis Burke. Before joining the USC School of Law faculty, Distinguished Professor Emeritus Burke was a VISTA volunteer and a legal services attorney. As a clinician, Professor Burke continues to represent low-income clients. In 2003, he was awarded the Outstanding Faculty Service Award for his years of community service, including Habitat for Humanities, Appleseed, and his pro bono representation of a death row client. He was an editor of Madam Chief Justice South Carolina's Jean Hafer Toll. Did I pronounce that right? Is it Hafer?
Hafer, yeah.
Okay. Published by USC Press in 2015. And is author of All for Civil Rights, African American Lawyers in South Carolina, 1868 to 1968, which is part of the Southern Legal Studies series by University of Georgia Press. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Today, part of our Speaker at the Center series, you spoke to us about this, your recent book, All for Civil Rights, and it was fascinating to learn all about African-American lawyers in South Carolina. And people can learn more about this book at the University of Georgia Press website. We'll have a link to it on our webpage. But if you could just, let's go way, way back. And before you even got interested in just African-American lawyers in South Carolina, well, how did you first get interested in law at all?
I think probably in the 1950s and early 1960s, seeing the Civil Rights Revolution on television and in Time magazine and Life magazine and Look magazine, things that don't exist anymore. Lawyers were playing a significant role, and that was something that I was fascinated by and I wanted to do.
And then later on through your career, how did you get interested in this topic of African-American lawyers?
When I was a brand new lawyer in 1975, I worked for the Legal Aid Service Agency in Columbia, and we all were assigned some kind of domestic cases, which meant you had to appear in the family court. The family court, which was in the old Columbia Hospital, judge that I first appeared before, the very first judge I ever appeared before, was Harold Boulware. Judge Boulware had been the chief civil rights lawyer in South Carolina back in the 1940s.
Wow.
And he was actually the local counsel in Briggs versus Elliott, which was the South Carolina component of Brown versus Board of Education.
Right.
For some reason, Judge Boulware took to me and I took to him, and we spent a lot of time just chatting and talking, and he was very encouraging of me about my legal career, and he inspired me to always be interested in him and then other black lawyers that I came to know.
Mm-hmm. And how did you figure on this time period? Because this is African American lawyers in South Carolina, 1868 to 1968. It's a nice, even, 100 years, but how did you come to that?
Well, the 1868 is when the first formal admission of black lawyer occurred in South Carolina. And I came up, 100 years seemed like a nice number, but 1968 is also kind of, the civil rights struggle is coming to an end in some ways by 1968. And the University of South Carolina, where I was on the faculty, had desegregated at that point and was having its first African-American law graduates. And I.S. Levy Johnson, who was somebody that I liked and admired, was a graduate in 1968, so I thought I'll have I.S. as my last lawyer in my book. So.
Well, that's great. It was fascinating, your talk today, to hear a lot of the statistics and different aspects of this within this 100 years time frame. One of the things you talked about were the black codes, and I had never heard that before. What does that mean?
The black codes were the laws enacted by the South Carolina legislature in the Reconstruction era, before the real Reconstruction began. It was an attempt to basically re-enslave the black population of the state. They restricted their movement, their right to work, didn't allow them to vote. They didn't allow them to hold most jobs without getting special permissions, et cetera.
Hmm. And at what point were the black codes started? Or
well, in 1866.
Okay, 66.
South Carolina, of course, was not back in the Union and not back in the Union because the federal government had not decided whether to readmit, and they put conditions on the southern states what they needed to do. And South Carolina adopted a constitution that recognized the emancipation of the slaves, but nothing else. Mm-mm. In 1865. And then 1866, they enacted these black codes that severely restricted the African-American citizens of the state. And the federal government said enough is enough and basically abrogated the black codes and imposed military rule on the state.
And when was that?
In 1866. And then moving on into 1868, the state held a referendum on whether to have a constitutional convention.
Oh, okay.
And a constitutional convention was held, and probably a majority of the delegates to that convention were black. A new constitution was written, and then that constitution was approved by the voters of the state. And, of course, you have to remember South Carolina was a majority black state.
Mm-hmm.
It was a majority black state then and was until almost 1930. So when you actually held a fair election and let people vote, blacks were going to outvote the whites.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things I thought was interesting at the beginning of your talk is you had two different numbers. One was how many African-American males are in the book, and then one was how many African-American females.
Yeah, there were not in that whole 100-year period, there were only three women.
Isn't that something? And you said you always get asked, who were those women?
Oh, yes, I get always asked who were those women. And you want me to name them now?
Yes, that'd be great.
Cassandra Maxwell, admitted in 1940 from Orangeburg. And I'm going to draw a blank about the second and third. Susanna Blackwell from Hodges was admitted in 1956. And Dorothy Sampson from Sumter in 1964.
Okay.
And none of them had any significant legal career in the state.
Mm-hmm. All out of state.
Well, Cassandra Maxwell left the state, got married and left the state.
Okay.
She practiced law in Philadelphia and you know, was fairly successful there. Miss Blackwell, we don't know really. She ran a business college in Washington, D.C. She never really practiced law. And Dorothy Sampson was disbarred. And I think really was disbarred because of her civil rights activity. She was an uppity black woman, and she got charged criminally for having a verbal dispute with a bank teller. She got arrested for not moving her car promptly enough when she brought people to the polls to register, or to the courthouse to register to vote. So, and then there was some difficulty with one of her cases where she took more money than the judge thought she should, but it was not the kind of thing that a white lawyer would have been disbarred for.
Right, right. Gosh, that's amazing. Are there any other stories like that that maybe come to mind that when you were writing this book that?
Well, there are innumerable stories. One of my favorite lawyer is William Whipper, who was one of the first lawyers, started practicing law in the state in 1866 and admitted to the bar officially in 1868. He stayed on in the state till he died in 1907.
Wow.
In Buford. He was elected as a circuit court judge and then denied the seat by the Republican governor of the state at the time. He was later elected probate judge in Beaufort County, and then the politics got really crazy in Beaufort, and fewer blacks were allowed to vote, and he was forced from office. But he continued on. He handled a major death penalty case in Georgetown in the early 1900s that went to the United States Supreme Court.
Wow. So
he stayed active. The sad thing is nobody knows where Whipper is buried.
Really?
Yeah, and he was as prominent a civil rights figure in the state in the 19th century as anybody.
That's amazing. You would think there would be a record somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, his wife had moved away, and he didn't have any real family in Buford left. So.
That's interesting. Tell us a little bit. I mentioned in the introduction some of your volunteer and pro bono work. Is what draws you to something like Habitat for Humanity or you know, wanting to volunteer with some of these organizations?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I like to think Habitat for Humanity was me thinking, oh, I'll go and learn how to do all these things because there'll be plumbers and electricians and carpenters there. And there were no plumbers, electricians, or carpenters there, just other guys like me. But no, it was I was really propelled by faith, I guess, and really feeling like using a hammer was a useful thing to do, and it was. It was we built the first Habitat houses in Columbia. So,
okay.
But I hadn't done that in a long time.
And what is Appleseed?
Appleseed is the Center for Legal Justice. Office is just a couple blocks away. They are kind of the poor people's advocacy group in the state, the legal advocacy group. They don't do so much direct representation as doing policy work, training the lawyers, educating the lawyers, educating the legislature, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I looked at some of the pictures in the book, and a lot of them came from the University of South Carolina's Caroliniana Library, so you obviously did a lot of research there.
Oh, I certainly did. They know me well over there.
And since this is Library Voices, when you did the research for this, and you said you've been working on this just for a few years.
Yeah, not hardly. It's really been 20 years. I
mean, so over that time, you must have used a lot of libraries and archives.
Oh, I certainly did. Well, of course, in Columbia, the Richland County Library is a wonderful library. Goodness. And of course, the university libraries, above Caroliniana and the main library, the state library, the state archives, in Charleston, the Charleston Free Library, and and then of course some been to Duke and UNC and Federal Archives in Atlanta and National Archives and Library of Congress and all that, and probably some I'm leaving out. a number of libraries, of course, you can correspond with. I mean, I can remember dealing with some libraries in Nebraska and some Colorado and places like that there. These lawyers, a number of the lawyers who were admitted during the Reconstruction era spread all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So
They didn't just stay in South Carolina.
No, they didn't stay in South Carolina.
Yeah.
One of them even went to Liberia and served on the Supreme Court of Liberia. So,
really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's fascinating. What's your other connection to libraries? Where have you, in your lifetime, just been a personal library user?
Or? I am a personal library user. I occasionally will buy a used paperback book because they're easier to use and travel, but I have a library card for Richland County, Lexington County, and Saluda County, where we have a farm. So I go to libraries every week. I mean, I've been in the library already this week. So.
Oh, that's great. And here we are in a library today.
Yes. A community without a library is no community. I mean, it's just...
It really is. And you think of, some of the cultures out there and maybe developing countries who, just don't have the same concept.
Mm-hmm.
But we're very lucky here to...
Yeah, we really are.
Yeah. What kind of other projects are you going to be working on? I know you're retired, but and you have a personal interest in birds.
Yeah, I'm a very serious birder. I've been on the board of the Carolina Bird Club, and I'm a member of the Audubon and a number of other organizations. That's a real just, personal hobby thing. I'm actually trying to work on a humor article about birding. I don't know that it'll get published, but I've been working on that a little bit. I keep keep being asked whether there's anything else to do. And the one thing that was never done from this project, the people who are really missing from this lawyer book in large measure are the clients. Mm. But the clients are much harder to research. It's little to know, you know, little to be able to find about them.
Right, because you'd have to get the attorney records.
Yeah, and you know, there's one case in here that is in here, the Pink Franklin case from Orangeburg County. He was charged with murder of a constable who came to arrest him, broke into his house in the middle of the night, and he shot the guy. Mm. And he escaped from a lynch mob. He ultimately was tried, convicted. And his case went to the U.S. Supreme Court and then back, and they had affirmed his death sentence. But this was in 1907, and, well, probably 1910, 1911 by then. And his death sentence was commuted by the governor of South Carolina in a very unusual move, in large measure because the NAACP nationally became interested in his case and came here and advocated for him.
Okay.
And he was saved. And then he spent another 7 years in jail. And then the governor at that point paroled him. And then he disappeared.
Hmm.
Couldn't find him. And some friends of mine who are genealogists, mm-hmm. I just telling them the story, mm-hmm. they started digging.
Really?
And they found him. They found him because he had moved his family about. They looked for his wife's name and his children's name, mm-hmm. and found those. And he had changed his name, moved 20 miles away, changed his name. And we found he died in 1947, and we found his death certificate. And they had penciled in his real name on the death certificate.
Really?
So that was fun. That was.
That is. Yeah. That's amazing. And one of the other things you had mentioned in your presentation was about all of the great stuff you can get out of Ancestry.
Yes, it's a
and how helpful
it's an incredible resource. I mean, you get the census records and the library records and the death records and the birth records, and mm-hmm. it's astounding what's there.
Yeah, it really is. Very important to those of us who are in the research arena.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that occurred to me that's of some use for this book hopefully it'll be used to genealogists because mm-hmm. I've got these folks in there and, you know, identified their hometowns and mm-hmm, where they mm-hmm. went to school and such. So.
One of the things I thought was very impressive looking through it is that the appendix is so important. You know, yeah. There's so much information that you have in the appendix with all the tables and the statistical data.
Mm-hmm. That was I just started doing it. I started, you know, keeping a list of the lawyers, and then what year were they admitted, and mm-hmm. Where were they educated, and it just ultimately became multiple.
Well, I mean, it really indices. It adds, you know, to the academy. This is important information that is not, you know, in one single place. Now it is, which is nice to be able to flip through and see. Anything else about this? This book that you'd like to leave us with?
No, except it was a real pleasure to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were times when I put the project down. It was from the time I actually was approached by University Press about doing the book until mm-hmm. publication was 10 years. There were a lot of times in that 10 years when I didn't do any work. I'd
right.
get frustrated and say, I can't do it. And
right.
I'd try to figure out how to make this a complete book.
Well, it's certainly, I'm sure, been a labor of love, and it has certainly resulted in something that is, again, very important to the literature and research for a lot of future generations. So thank you.
Well, I hope so. Thank you, Curtis. I appreciate it very much.
And thank you to our listeners. You can find Library Voices SC on Podbean, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, or add us on your favorite podcast app. Our podcast website address is librarycast.podbean.com. We love hearing from our listeners, so send us your comments and suggestions for future topics. Library Voices SC is the official podcast of the South Carolina State Library. Until next time, this is Curtis Rogers. Thanks for listening.